Well,
hi.
Like,
You're listening to All the Best. I'm Michael Bryden, and today we're delving into the world that exists in between words. We're looking at the often silent communication that we share with one another and how we find meaning in it. Guiding us through the silence today is All the Best producer and Victorian State Coordinator, Beth Atkinson-Quinton. Hey, Beth.
Hey, Michael.
So I think we have a bit of a problem. We're a radio program and we've got stories today about silence. Is that going to work?
Bear with me and hopefully it'll all be okay.
Okay, I'm going to trust you on this one. But how are we going to communicate without words?
Think about how much we say without our words. What if we didn't have words to communicate? What if we just chose not to speak? How would this change the way we interact with one another? What are we saying to each other with our touch, with our posture, with the amount of space we leave between each other when we sit next to one another, in our expression, and in our silence?
Okay, but not too quiet, I hope. Who are we going to hear from first?
Well, a lot of people are born with the ability to learn how to speak, to learn a language, to learn to use speech as a way to share our ideas about the world. But some of us aren't. Some of us just have to learn to communicate in other ways.
So my housemate came home, you know, with his beautiful girlfriend who was completely deaf, and she had been deaf since birth.
This is Mon. It's 14 years ago. She's living in a share house with seven other people.
She only spoke with her hands, via sign language. And I had learnt sign language in primary school, just the alphabet, you know, Auslan alphabet. So she taught me the alphabet in, you know, well, what they use in the Americas, which is on one hand. And then after that, I would spell out a word to her and then she would show me what that word is, you know, how to sign that word. And we used to go out, you know, to see bands and drinking and to clubs, and she was amazing and would dance more than anyone that I had, you know, that would normally go out with me. And her senses were amazing. She could just, you know, feel the beat in the floor, see what people were doing, and was really independent, would always want to order her own drinks, and you know. So I became quite good friends with her, and I used to get phone calls, which were really weird because they would be from the relay center, and it would be someone that I didn't know relaying a message to me. But I thought it was really funny at the time because they would use, you know, speak to me like they were my friend. So what would happen is my friend, who was actually deaf, would have a computer where she would type in her message and the person at the relay centre would read that message to me. So it would be like,
"Hi, how are you going? Are we going out tonight?"
And then there would be a pause and then I would respond, and then there would be some typing in the background and then some, you know, a pause, and then she would relay the answer. And I always remember friends sitting around me saying, "Who are you talking to?" But it was a great, great experience. So I'm not sure where they were, but they had met each other and fallen in love. And they had kept in contact via email, and she had was following his movements all over Europe, and she decided to go and find him. And so she followed him but kept missing him by one day wherever he was. And then I think it was Germany, but I have this vision of him boarding a train and, you know, the train ready to leave, and she's running down, you know, a busy station, yelling out his name and yelling, you know, as a deaf person, just whatever sound can come out of her mouth. And, you know, everyone's looking and pointing, like, what the hell is this commotion? And he saw her and got off the train, and, you know, I have in my head this slow motion vision of them running towards each other, arms outstretched, you know. And then after that, they were inseparable, and she came home to Australia with him and was one of the most beautiful people that I've ever met, and became a really good friend of mine.
Maybe it's the hopeless romantic poet in me, but I think I'd find it really difficult to fall in love without words. Doesn't everyone say that communication's the key to a strong relationship, and don't you need words to fall in love?
Apparently not. He's not the only one who fell in love without words. Mon has a story of her own.
I lived overseas for quite a while as well. I lived in Peru, actually. And I fell in love with a Peruvian man who didn't speak any English, and I didn't speak any Spanish to start off with as well. And we also fell in love, and we lived together for about 6 months. And I often think to this day, I remember going out actually, and people would say, "Are you two still together? How is that possible? You guys don't even speak the same language." But, you know, from my own experience, you don't have to speak the same language to communicate and to be on the same level and understand what's going on. We lived in the same town, and obviously we'd be at the same, you know, we had mutual friends, and it was a small town, so we'd always be at the same places and stuff. I remember being at a barbecue, calling into a friend's for a barbecue, and they were cooking plantains, which is like the bananas that you cook on a barbecue, and they put chocolate in them. And I remember sitting on a bench, and he was sitting next to me, and our friends handed us both a plantain with chocolate, and we just sat there and ate these chocolate plantains and just stared at each other and laughed the whole time. That's really and then we just, you know, we'd hang out and very slowly communicate with a dictionary, or, you know, signing, or the little Spanish that I had. Somehow it worked. Yeah.
Did he learn English a little bit?
No, he wouldn't. He refused. He was like, he said he learned it in primary school. I have a feeling that he'd learn a bit, because they do touch on it at school, but everyone's too timid to use it. The house that we lived in was above a store that had internet access. So if we were having an argument, we'd say, "Okay, we're going to the shop. Traducta de Google," which is, you know, Google Translator. And I remember we would sit in the store, we'd be like typing, you know, furiously away, and then it'd translate, and then he'd read it, look at me, you know, in disgust, and type back. And then eventually, after 5 minutes, we would just both end up laughing, going, "This is ridiculous. Let's go upstairs and make love." So eventually I did learn Spanish, and I did go back to Peru, and I'm still friends with this person. But later on I realised, wow, we are really different. And I used to laugh at, you know, things. I remember I'd say, I can't remember what it was in Spanish, but I'd say, "I'm going to work. Do you want to come to work," or whatever? And he'd say, "No," whatever his response was in Spanish. Say, "No, I'm just going to stay here." And whatever it was that he said, I took it at he was being really sweet and saying, "I'm not coming, but, you know, I love you." But actually, he was saying, "No, I don't want to go to work with you today." If you're standing somewhere and you have your eyes closed and someone comes up behind you or is fairly close to you, you can feel that someone is there. We didn't have all those extra words where we would just... You don't talk for the sake of talking. You talk when it's necessary. So you cut out a whole lot of other things that are there when you have speech that, you know, aren't necessary, that you have to try and interpret.
That story was produced by Beth AQ and told by Monique Henry. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Michael Bryden, and I'm joined in the studio by Beth AQ, who is weaving us in and out of the spaces between words and examining the meaning that's hidden in silence.
Sometimes it's hard to know what to say and when to say it. It's important to acknowledge that it's okay to be quiet, and maybe sometimes the best way to communicate with someone else is just to listen. But when you're working with animals, listening is more than just about hearing words.
I guess that was my obsession growing up, was that I just wanted to speak to animals, and I still do. Like, if anyone can organise that for me, that'd be great.
This is Jess Bell.
We had some really old horses we got from this old lady near our place when I was growing up, and I spent a lot of time sitting in the grass when I was a kid wishing I could talk to them, and any time that I would think that they kind of understood what I was saying, I would get so excited. I learnt to ride when I was younger with endurance riders that were our neighbours, and they just let me come and watch them and help them tack up their horses and stuff. And I was taught when I was young that I had to use my physical strength to control my horse, and that was hard for me because I was a beanpole of a kid and really sensitive and not someone that wanted to do a whole lot of yanking around and kicking. I just felt like I couldn't tell my horse what I wanted to say. That was what was really exciting for me when I met this lady, Susie, that was doing her own form of natural horsemanship. First, you have to understand the nature of a horse, that it's a prey animal and it's a herd animal. It's a really social animal and it has totally different priorities to us. We're a predator animal. And like for a prey animal, they have, for horses, they have eyes on the side of their head, which means their vision is totally different to ours. Their priorities in life are to be able to detect danger and to be able to escape from danger. And then also to play amongst the herd and to jostle. They kind of establish a hierarchy. It's really important in their society as a herd animal. Before even going anywhere near getting on a horse, just watching them play and watching them communicate with each other so that we could communicate with them in a way that they'd understand. Just force doesn't make sense. She started teaching me all about the body language that horses use to communicate with each other. So, for instance, if a horse's ears are pinned back, they're irritated, or if one of their back legs is cocked and they're kind of slouching, they're relaxed, or if they're processing new information, they lick their lips and blink. When you start watching how they communicate, you develop a silent language with them, I guess, and then you can try and feed back to them in a way that they'll respond to. In the time that I did work with Susie and practice, communication, I guess, that I had with the horse that I was working with was unbelievable compared to my childhood of being frustrated. I found that really hard, and I broke my arm and I got hurt quite a lot and I just knew that it wasn't quite right. So basically you just work with one horse so that you can establish a good relationship with them. And because of their hierarchical nature, they need a leader, and as a confident and strong leader that's not going to lead them into a dangerous situation. So when Susie and I had our first session, I couldn't believe it because she understood what I was asking. Use your body language and your energy to communicate with them. So it definitely teaches you to be more aware of your own energy and body language as well, because they're always aware. So you start on the ground, and for example, if I wanted to ask Beth to take a sidestep, you're standing next to her and you've already been giving her some love and stuff, and it's all very low energy. But then when you want to ask them to do something, you have to lift your energy up and kind of direct it sideways, and then you apply basically no pressure or the lightest amount of pressure. So if I wanted to ask her to go sideways, I would put a tiny bit of pressure on her shoulder with my fingers, but barely touching at all. And if she took a sidestep, then I'd immediately take it off and go back to a low energy and pat her and say thank you. And then in that same instance, if I'd put a little bit of pressure and she hadn't done anything, I'd put a tiny bit more pressure and a tiny bit more pressure until she even slightly moved her foot towards the right direction. Like, even a try counts. That's a better way to communicate with them, is the putting on and the release of pressure. That was the way Susie did it. And for me, having not used that kind of communication growing up with my horse Doogie, when I did try it and to see how quickly it worked. It was just, I couldn't believe. They're incredibly intelligent creatures, and I think, how can you expect to demand something of a highly intelligent creature without listening to what they're saying? A monologue isn't a way to communicate with an animal, and horses are constantly, as with all animals, I believe, they're constantly telling us stuff, but we don't know how to understand.
That was Jess Bell talking to Beth AQ.
Sometimes we just speak because we can, and not because we have anything to say. We're going to hear from Holly Masson, who decided to forego her ability to speak in an attempt to calm her mind and find a quieter, more meaningful connection with herself.
I guess I've always been really interested in how the mind works. I love how people work. I love the psychology of it. And also, on a personal level, I guess I'm just always trying to make life easier for myself. I used to suffer from hardcore anxiety. I wanted to do this course forever, but only in the last maybe 2 years I've started meditating, and it's just helped so much. Passion is just a very specific meditation technique, and it's all about insight. I am a bit scared of what might come up. I don't think I've buried anything, but I mean, who knows? But I'm excited, if anything. I know some people leave because I think day four, that's when it kind of hits you. So I really can't leave. I think I'll be really like annoyed with myself if I do. You're just a body, you're just a mind.
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 You're just a body, you're just a mind. You're just a body, you're just a mind. It's about acknowledging, you know, you're going to get uncomfortable, like, sitting for that long. You're going to get bored, and just acknowledging that and sitting with it and being content with it in life. I mean, it'd be pretty awesome to kind of be content with whatever feeling, you know, with pain or with unhappiness, and just feel like it's okay, it'll pass, it's not forever. And I talk a lot. I'm able to, like, talk, and I sing all the time, and I think it'll be good for me to just kind of listen to myself and just, yeah, just kind of be for 10 days. You give up everything, like your phone, like your, yeah, even not checking Facebook for a day is like, it's weird. It's like constantly having access to everything. And I'll come out, it'll be like coming out of the Big Brother house, I think. Like coming out and being like, anything could have happened. Anything.
We woke up at 4 to a sound of a gong.
First 4 days is about quietening the mind and just concentrating on your breath. And I think there's about 50 people that do it. And the boys and girls are sectioned off, and you can't have any distractions. You need to go in there and like completely be serious about it. You can't make eye contact with anyone. There's an hour every day that is put aside to ask the teacher questions, and on the very last day, on the 10th day, you're able to speak to kind of get you back into, you know, reality.
We had to start meditating. Meditated for 2 hours, had breakfast, then meditated for 2 or 3 hours. Oh, there was a break as well. I made sure I walked an hour every day around the gardens, and then we went to bed at 9, 9:30. So it started with meditation in the meditation hall. So as soon as we kind of got there, took our shoes off, walked in, just silence, I turned to one of the girls and I said, "See ya." There was a girl there. I don't know, I just sensed she was kind of struggling. I don't know how, but I just sensed it. And one morning I was watching the sunrise and she walked up. It was two stories. She walked up and was kind of standing on the balcony with me. And then she moved closer, so I moved closer to her. And then I moved my body into hers to face her and then tried to kind of replicate her breathing, which is not allowed, you know, to communicate at all, but I just wanted to make her feel safe and like it was okay. And she totally understood that. On the day that we could talk to each other, I was like, that day, she's like, thank you. She totally noticed. Another time it started raining and I'd brought an umbrella, and the bathrooms are maybe, I don't know how far away, maybe half a K or something, but it's a fair walk. And it started raining and one of the girls went into the bathroom, so I waited for her. It's like, okay, it might stuff it up if I communicate with her, but it'll stuff her up if she's drenched and has to meditate for the next 2 hours. So it was kind of pushed the umbrella in front of her and I just saw her relief. She's like, thank God. And she said to me on the day that we could talk, like, thank you, I was having such a shitty day. And even without conversation, we all formed such a bond. All the guys were so by themselves, so just distant, you know, the breaks and lunch and everything just completely by themselves, but all of us girls kind of traveled in packs. I didn't notice, but until one of the guys mentioned it, like, were you guys talking? Were you guys breaking the rules? I'm like, no, we just created this bond without communication, and I'm talking to the girls still. But it was funny because I connected with some girls more than others. You'd kind of sit with them at lunch or on break. It's funny, one of the women, she was just so zen the whole time, and it was so nice to sit near her because she was so calm. And I told her that, and she said the whole time she was struggling, she was freaking out in her head, and the teacher told her that she needs to walk slow and just kind of, you know, ease it. And she just was saying it the whole time she was struggling. She wasn't zen at all, which is quite funny. But yeah, it was really hard to be inside my own head. But the last 2 days was meditation throughout the whole day and night. So when you were showering, eating, everything, just thinking, being mindful, being present, thinking about the sensations from head to toe to head. And to be honest, meditation sometimes was a struggle, but sometimes it was just great to have a break from my head because I was thinking so much. And I was just, to be honest, when I was able to start speaking, I just wanted to listen to everyone else. I didn't want to listen to myself anymore. I didn't care what I had to say. As soon as I was able to talk, I didn't know what to say and I forgot what my voice really sounded like. And it was hard to kind of collect my thoughts and turn them into speech. I found like I was getting tongue-tied, and then I noticed that a lot of the things I do say is just kind of not, you know, it's like, why'd I even say that? I mean, I know this is so cliche, but you're your own worst enemy. And I have noticed things that I tell myself that aren't necessarily true. Put myself down, and I know to kind of, if I don't like something that I think about, I can kind of just acknowledge it and let it pass. I've definitely learned to communicate differently with myself. Everyone dealt with it so differently, but then so similarly, and it's just funny that we were just all doing it together, but so alone at the same time. I felt really coming out of it really confident and just really grounded, and I'm still feeling like that. I mean, it's been maybe a week, and I hate being alone. And I just, the first day back, I took myself to the pancake parlor for pancakes. I was like, table for one, like, and just really happy about it, like, just little things like that.
That was the story of Holly Masson. It, along with all the stories you've heard today, would not have been possible without the hard work of Beth AQ. Hey Beth, do you want to read out the credits?
Sure. This episode of All the Best was produced at 3RRR in Melbourne in association with FBI Radio in Sydney, SYN in Melbourne and 4ZZZ in Brisbane.
Big thank you to Beck Fari and our outgoing EP, Jess O'Callaghan, for their patience and continued support with this episode.
Our features executive producer is Heidi Pett. Our community coordinator is Aidan Mullins. Our state coordinators are Skye Kirkham and me, Bethany Atkinson-Quinton. And our SYN production manager is Beck Fari. Our presenters are Pip Rasmussen.
And I'm Michael Bryden. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.